This is Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Harrison. A 1-2 punch for President Trump, more scandal over sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, and Rhode Island officials address the breakdown of their deal with the PASOKs. That's all part of the conversation today on our weekly political roundtable. I'll be your host. Ian Donis is back next week. I'm joined, as usual, by University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Welcome, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And Rhode Island Public Radio's political analyst Scott McKay. Hey, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Our special guest today is Providence NAACP President Jim Vincent. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
This week, we learned details of how the Trump Organization kept stories about two affairs out of the news by working with the owner of tabloid The Inquirer. That came after a plea deal with Trump's fixer, Michael Cohen. On the very same day, a jury convicted former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort on 8 counts of tax and bank fraud. What happens next?
Well, I'm thinking about terms like best people, drain the swamp. To quote the great philosopher Dan Rather, where Abe Lincoln had a team of rivals, President Trump has a web of felons.
That's very well put. I think we have to wait, though. You said 1-2 punch. I think the knockout may be coming soon, because I don't think this is the end of the indictments, and I don't think I think you're going to see more. It looks like a web that's being created. I'm amused at Donald Trump when he keeps saying what a brave man Paul Manafort is. This is code. Please don't break. But I wonder if that's going to work.
Now, Trump also says this has nothing to do with Russia, nothing to do with collusion.
Certainly has a lot to do with his judgment. The one thing we know is all these people were hired by Donald Trump. And what really stands out is the guy sounds some days like Vito Corleone right out of The Godfather, talking about people flipping and ratting him out, this kind of thing. But I think the Democrats have to tread a little carefully here and not use the I word, impeachment, until after the midterm elections in November.
Why is that?
Well, I think you're right, because I think it would galvanize Trump's base. If anything, we've seen in the past that when he's threatened, his base gets riled up. So I don't think you want to do anything to do that. And also the fact is that in order to have an impeachment, I guess they would have to win the Senate. And right now that looks unlikely.
And plus the fact, I think the strategy for the Democrats now should be bread and butter issues, talk about what they can do and not make the mistakes that they made the last time, talking about how bad Trump was and not really promoting a agenda of their own.
And what about Republicans? What should their strategy be?
They've got some tough decisions to make. I think state by state, they're going to have to look at it, and they're going to have to let people who are in purple or blue states be able to criticize the president, particularly on this corruption issue. You want to walk away from that and still say you support the aims, the tax cuts, those kinds of things. But I think at some point, as we saw with Nixon, the party just cannot stand behind this fellow if there's going to be more indictments and more arrests.
Yeah, and I think the strategy is, I think it's clear from Manafort that this is about taxes, but that leads him to push Manafort towards the Russia investigation. I mean, there's another trial coming up, and I think that's where the shoes will drop when it comes to collusion in Russia.
A damaging report found most of the Catholic diocese in Pennsylvania covered up sexual abuse by priests over many decades. Rhode Island's Bishop Thomas Tobin worked in one of those dioceses in Pittsburgh. His office declined our request for comment, but they told the Providence Journal Tobin was aware of some of the abuse but did nothing because that wasn't part of his job description. Does this scandal have an impact beyond Pennsylvania?
I think it's a worldwide scandal, and it certainly does. And as a Catholic and somebody that was an altar boy in the early 60s in Boston, no less, it's just reprehensible, all the things that we're finding out. I mean, that they were willingly complicit in most of this stuff. It's almost unbelievable. If you didn't see it with your own eyes, you wouldn't believe it.
I do think, though, I think it goes beyond this in the United States. I mean, first of all, the idea in Rhode Island that it's indefensible that they're not going to extend the statute of limitations when they have it in Massachusetts and they have it in Connecticut. I mean, they're obfuscating by saying, well, we're not sure of how many years. Please, they've got to get to do that. Moreover, I really think the idea of going state by state and looking at this across the country has some resonance. This is appalling, and I think it deserves more attention.
Scott McKay, do you think this is the year that the change in the statute of limitations for sexual abuse might actually happen?
Well, it's certainly something that they should consider. It's urgent. If you look at this, both Jim and Maureen are correct. This is worldwide. We saw this in Ireland. We've seen it in South America. We've seen it in states across the country. Rhode Island had a real problem with this back in the 80s and 90s. I remember covering the case of Father William O'Connell back in Bristol, the first one who really got busted. The state police busted the rectory and found photos of altar boys, and it was really sad, and it was tough for everybody. But I think Pope Francis is going to have to step up. He's a popular leader. I think this is probably the biggest crisis that he's faced so far, and I think he's going to have to come down, try to build confidence back into the folks in the Catholic flock.
Well, it's going to be a long, hard slog.
Made statements condemning this, but where's the action?
He's going to have to do it. I mean, it's beyond now. It is a worldwide scandal, so he has no choice. He's either going to have to do something or else the church is going to be threatened as we know it.
This week, Rhode Island and Pawtucket officials spoke out about how they lost to Worcester in an effort to keep the Red Sox top farm team in Pawtucket. Scott, you were there. What did you think of the presentation?
Well, boy, I swear, it was kind of like a big wake where, you know, everybody didn't really want to admit that the beloved relative is gone. First of all, what struck me is there's no plan B. They never had a fallback for what to do with downtown Pawtucket if this stadium deal didn't go through. The second thing I noticed is that everybody who was involved in this is looking for a message. We're right in the middle of election season. There's going to be a lot of fingers pointed between now and the November election. We've already seen Governor Gina Raimondo saying, well, what Worcester put up there was too rich. I couldn't prudently give that much money to the team and still protect Rhode Island taxpayers.
And we should say that the deal with Worcester isn't quite final yet, although it looks likely to pass. It still needs a stamp from the Worcester City Council.
I do think that the idea that it was such an excessive ask, I mean, what Worcester said they were going to give, mitigates some of the criticism. I mean, it is realistic to say it was too rich, we couldn't do it. And moreover, as far as the political ramifications, really, Raimondo and Fung are on the same page. So I don't know that this is going to be much of a campaign issue when it comes to the general election.
Some people are going to say there's a lack of leadership here. When Bruce Sundland built an airport, when everybody told them they couldn't do it during the credit union crisis, and when Link Allman put everybody in the room, they said Fidelity wouldn't come here. They had a union issue, and he put everybody in the room, and they got it done. And that never happened here.
Well, who are they going to vote for? Joe Trillo?
What I was going to say is that we're in a different time because you didn't have Studio 38 hovering over back in Bruce Sundland's time, and I think that different times, different people.
It does raise questions. If Massachusetts is willing to do this kind of deal, to borrow that kind of money, do they know something that Rhode Island doesn't know?
Well, they're talking about $100 million altogether. I mean,
don't forget, Governor Baker in Massachusetts does not need legislative approval the way they structured this deal with infrastructure. So I think that's a big part of it, too.
And it's even more than $100 million because it's $100 million the city will borrow plus $35 million from the state for infrastructure.
No, it's a very generous deal, and realistically, it is a risk.
On the other hand, some people are going to really point fingers at Nick Mattiello here, saying all he cared about was his own district.
Nick Mattiello, the Speaker of the Rhode Island House.
I think that's a good point because originally, you know, Gina Raimondo talked about the fact that the Senate and she had a plan. They were willing to go with it, and that really points the finger at Mattiello. It'll be interesting to see if he survives the election.
Tune in next Friday for more conversation. I'm your host, Elizabeth Harrison, filling in for Ian Donis. Thanks to our regular contributors, University of Rhode Island political scientist Maureen Moakley.
Thank you.
And Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay.
Great to be here, Liz.
And a very special thanks to our guest this week, Jim Vincent, president of the Providence NAACP.
Thanks for inviting me.